we will go ahead and get started. So there's a story about a captain of a ship who's out at sea, and across the horizon he sees a light. And when you're out at the ocean or you're in an airplane and you see another light, you have to pay attention to which direction the light's going. If the light stays in one spot, then you know you're on a collision course. If it's not moving away to the left or right, if it's right there, you're on a collision course. So that's what's happened is this captain sees a light over the horizon, and it's not moving position, it's on a collision course. These two ships are headed toward each other. So the captain tells the signalman, I want you to send a message to that ship, alter course 10 degrees, we're on a collision path. So the message comes back, you alter your course 10 degrees. Well, that doesn't go over too well with the captain. So the captain says, you send this signal back. I am the captain of this ship, and I'm ordering you to alter your course 10 degrees. The signal comes back. I am Seaman Third Class Jones. You alter your course 10 degrees. The captain doesn't like that. He says, send this message to him. I am a battleship. You alter your course 10 degrees. And very quickly, the message comes back, I am a lighthouse. You alter your course 10 degrees. Of course, the captain altered his course. At that point, he realized what he was up against. But there's a lot of interesting things that go on in this story because there's the pride, there's the I know I'm right, there's the I know I'm at the top, I'm the one that needs to be listened to, I am the leader. And in fact, there was something out there that was even bigger than him. So today we're going to talk about leadership. My name is Brad Prince. I live in Carrollton, Georgia, and formerly from Wedowee, and formerly from right here in Oxford. I grew up, played basketball right here in this very civic center. And Andy asked me to talk about leadership, and this is one of my all-time favorite subjects. So, Alan, maybe yours was a hard one for you to talk about. I love talking about leadership. And I wanted to start with that story because when you think about leadership, a lot of times we think about leading people, but let me tell you, the hardest person for you to lead is the one that's looking back at you when you look in the mirror every morning. Personal leadership is the hardest part of leadership. You absolutely cannot lead another person until you are willing to lead yourself. And personal leadership is where it all has to start. We have to make sure we have the right perspective on ourselves, our situations, what we're up against. We've got to be willing to listen, to learn, regardless of where the message comes from. Regardless of the stature of the person, I mean seaman versus captain. At that point, the captain had to bow to the command of Seaman Third Class Jones because of the situation. And so we've got to be good personal leaders. We've got to be in control of me because there's only one person I can control. I can't control any of you. I can't control my kids no matter how much I want to. I try to lead them, but I can't force their choices. But the only person I can't control is me. And that's the only person you can control. So we're talking about Moses this morning, leadership lessons from the life of Moses. So let's just look at Moses by the numbers. Moses lived 120 years. His life was divided into three parts. He spent 40 years in Egypt. He spent 40 years in Midian. And then he spent 40 years leading the Israeli rebels. They were rebels to leave Egypt, but they rebelled against Moses as well many times. He had two families in his heritage. He was both slave and royal. You think about that. He was both a slave and royalty at the same time. What an interesting situation to be in. To grow up in royalty, but to know that your birth family is slaves. He had two children, committed one murder. He led 2.5 million, approximately, on the low side. People. He had that many followers who also rebelled against him several times. Received 10 commandments twice because he got mad the first time and threw them down and broke them. And interestingly, first time God cut them out of the stone and wrote on them. Second time, God said, you go cut them out this time and then I'll write on them. So the second set, The ones that they kept, Moses had to hew them out of the stone by himself. And I'm pretty sure every time he's sitting there chiseling away, he's thinking, man, I wish I had not thrown these things down the first time. Built one tabernacle, one major mistake recorded, and he was one in a billion, roughly. We don't know how many people were in the world at that time, but if there was 2.5 million Jews in Egypt, there's other countries, some estimates put the world population at around a million people at that time. And it says that Moses was the most meek man of all on the earth. So when it comes to meekness, he was one in a billion. Quite a man, this Moses that we're going to talk about this morning. Alan said this earlier, and I already had this slide in my PowerPoint, and I'm sitting there, I've got it up, because that way if he mentioned something, I wanted to make a note, and I'm elbowing Nicole, and going, look, I'm going to say the same thing. Context matters. It does. So what I'm going to do is give you a little context for the life of Moses, so that we can draw some leadership lessons from the entire bigger picture of the context. You ever heard of the process of incubation? If you've got eggs and you don't have a mother chicken or hen or something to sit on them, you can incubate the eggs. And what this does is it protects the eggs and it provides the necessary environment to support growth. Now, we use this term in business to talk about small businesses. There are small business development centers and incubators that give you an office space, they give you support staff, access to accountants, access to consultants, places for you to meet. And so you don't have to have all of that to get started. You can go and work in this incubator for a set period of time to give you a chance to get your business off the ground. We do the same thing with, it's basically what parenting is. We have our children, protect them, provide a safe environment, give them guidance, but at some point they've got to go out on their own. Well, what God was doing with Israel is he had promised that they would be a nation that would bless all of the earth. But when they went to Egypt, there was only 72 of them. So God took them to Egypt basically to incubate the children of Israel until there was enough of them and they were a big enough people to be their own country. You can't start a country with 72 people. It doesn't work. And so they had to have a large number of people. But the problem was they got comfortable in Israel. Now they were, at the end they weren't too comfortable. But 400 years, they were in Egypt longer than we've been a country. And we're coming up on July the 4th, and this will be, what, 241 years. Well, I mean, Egypt, they're still living it up in Egypt at this point, and they're still growing, and they're still getting bigger in Egypt. So 400 years that they were there, they got comfortable. Well, most of us, if we're comfortable, we're not going to take our own initiative to break out of the incubator, are we? We're not going to take our own initiative to get out and get on our own. They call that, let's see, there's a term for those kids these days that are 35 and 40 years old and they're still living at home. They failure to launch is the phrase, I think, where they didn't ever just break out because they got it too good at home. They don't have, you know, everything's taken care of. And so the failure to launch, that's what God couldn't let happen to Israel. So he had to make them real uncomfortable. That was the slavery, the oppression, and everything that he brought on them so that they could basically get out of their shell. So sometimes we see that God has to crack our shell to get us out of our comfort zone. We don't like that process. And we can't always see that process. Israel didn't really understand what was going on. They just all of a sudden, here comes this guy named Moses showing back up, and he's going to take us out. And then they complained all the time. But this process was meant for their good. So Israel had to make a choice. They had been told, if they would have listened, they had been told that God was going to take them to a land flowing with milk and honey. They had been told that they were going to be given a promised land. that they would be given all of this land, that they would have houses that they didn't build, vineyards they didn't plant, wells to drink from that they didn't dig. They had been told all of this. They had to choose whether they were going to believe that there was something better than what they had. They didn't know the process of how we're going to get there. How are we going to get to this new place? So they were going to have to trust. This is where faith comes in. Context is everything looking backwards. We can see the bigger picture. But in the moment, we can't see the big picture most of the time. We don't see the big picture. Hindsight is what's 20/20. In the now, we've got to have faith. We've got to believe that if God said something is going to be better for me on the other side, that it's going to be better, regardless of what difficulties I have to go through to get to the other side. And we've got to have faith. So they had to make a choice. So now with that context of what God is doing is He's incubating Israel to make them the country that they needed to be to fulfill the promise that He made to Abraham. He had to incubate them in Egypt, and now's the time for them to crack that shell. It's time for them to come out. They've got enough people to be a strong enough people to be their own country for them to break out and be on their own. The time has come for that to happen. So here comes Moses' life. So Moses' birth, he had a faithful birth family, somewhat compassionate royal family, except for Pharaoh. Pharaoh at this time was trying to kill off all the boys because there was too many Hebrews. So he was trying to get rid of them. But his daughter was compassionate. So she sees this baby in a basket in the Nile, and she had compassion on him. And so Moses had a faithful birth family and a compassionate royal mother, at least, that raised him. So Moses, because of his sister, you know the story, his sister runs up to Pharaoh's daughter and says, "Do you want me to go find a Hebrew nurse for him?" So how beautiful is this, that God, to spare Moses, allows him to be raised in the royal family of Pharaoh, but nursed by his own mother and raised by his birth family until it was time for him to go. There's a lot of faith going on here. There's a lot of faith happening in this story because they told Moses and taught him. He learned about his birth family. No doubt he learned about his heritage. He learned about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the promises that were given. He learned about that from his birth family. And he knew about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But you know what? What he learned was the same stories that we've learned. You know how Moses learned about the creation? Because of the stories that people told him. And where do we have our story of creation? Who wrote it? Moses. He had to choose to believe it. He had a choice. See, Egypt, what he learned in schools of Egypt, and we're told in Stephen's chapter 7 sermon that got him killed, he says that Moses was learned in all the ways of Egypt. And they didn't believe in God, so he had a choice to make. Was he going to believe in the God of creation that he learned about from his birth family? Or is he going to believe in the gods and the science of the Egyptians? He had a choice to make. So he's raised in this very interesting situation. And Hebrews 11 and 24 talks about this choice. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. And so Moses is here and he's got this choice. I could live it up. I'm the son, grandson of Pharaoh. And my mom has raised me in this royal family. But I've also got this other family. So he's got a choice to make between his two families, between the very different belief systems of those two families, and ultimately the outcome of that decision. And he knows, hey, if I stay here with the Egyptians, I can live it up now. But if my Hebrew family's right, there's a different outcome for them than for me. And so he had respect to the recompense of the reward. So, some questions to consider. Would it have made sense, this is question number one, would it have made sense for Moses to choose affliction if he didn't believe in the God of Abraham? Would it make sense for Moses to choose affliction if he didn't believe in God? Of course not. It wouldn't have made any sense at all. Second question, would it have made sense to give up on the pleasures and the riches of Egypt if he didn't believe there was something better for God's people? Of course not. And would it have made sense for Moses to believe in God but stay in Egypt? Of course not. So what's my point? My point is that leadership lesson number one, belief slash faith is the mission of our life. Without belief, going back to Israel would have been pointless. Without belief, it would have been better off to have stayed in Egypt. But he believed and he had faith and he chose the right thing. But acknowledging it and believing it, but then choosing to stay, that wouldn't have made sense either. It was the faith, the belief that drove his mission and his purpose in life that made the difference. It was his belief and his faith that drove his mission. So, he had a personal mission statement. And his mission was to go back and be with the people that he believed were going to have the best outcome. And that's what drove his choices in life. Now, Moses held on to that. He held on to that belief. He held on to that faith because he faced some terrible challenges. He had to do some very difficult things in his life. And if you don't have that core belief and that core faith, you can't face those challenges and stay the course like he did. So Moses had a very core belief, a very strong faith. Moses lived with a purpose. I said I love to talk about leadership. One of the most respected names in leadership is Stephen Covey, if you're reading secular leadership material. Well, they've got this program. It's on the web. Everybody can do it. It's a set of questions to get you to think through things to develop your own personal mission statement for your life. And I encourage you to go out and do it. You can, I like Alan, I'll give you the link to it later if you want it. I'll be glad to give it to you. Or I can send it to Andy and he can send it out or post it on the Facebook page. But what it does is it asks you questions to help you think about what's important to you. So one of the scenarios that they have you to think through, there's two versions of it. One's a little more morbid. It has you to think about, imagine going to a funeral. Mike's at a funeral this morning for somebody, what I've understood, saw her at church on Sunday, fell, died, funeral, like that. We never know what's going to happen. We never know when our time's going to come. But imagine you're going to a funeral, and you recognize all the people there, so you know that this person at this funeral ran in your circle, because it's all mutual friends that's there. So you're making your way through the line to view the body, and as you approach the casket, you notice that that's you. That's you laying there in the casket. And then you sit down in the sanctuary for the funeral, and four people get up. Somebody from your family, one of your friends, somebody that you worked with, and somebody from your church. What are they going to say? What is it that you want them to say about you at that point? What do you want somebody from your family to say about how you lived, how you led them, how you loved them? What do you want the people from your job to say about your work ethic? What do you want your friends to say about how you were a friend? Were you a friend like Jonathan and David were? What do you want the people from your church to say about the kind of Christian that you were, the kind of life you lived? And as you think about those things, what you're getting to is the core of what's most important to you. And here's the thing, if you think through that and God's not in that picture, then you've got a belief and a faith problem. And so what you need to do is to think about what is driving my life. What do I want to be remembered as? So that's the morbid version. The not so morbid version says, imagine your 80th birthday party. And you're surrounded by friends and family and people from work who've come to celebrate with you. And they get up and make some comments. What do you want them to say at your 80th birthday party? So that one's not quite as morbid as the funeral, but it's the same point. Toward the end of your life, what do you want people to say? Well, if we're going to create that, we got to live it. We've got to live that life before people. And if we want to be remembered at the end of our life as a person, a man of faith, a woman of faith, then we've got to live a life of faith. That means I've got to lead myself. That means I've got to make those choices. That means I've got to live with a purpose. And that's what Moses did. Moses could choose the life of luxury or the life of affliction. But Moses saw past the fun of the moment. He saw past the end of the life. He saw past the treasures. He saw past the riches. He saw past all of that, believed in God, believed in God's reward, and chose God's reward over the pleasures of the moment. And we live in Egypt, friends. We live in the modern day Egypt in America. And we can choose to live in the pleasures of the day, or we can choose to live a life of faith that will lead to a better home eternal. But we've got to see past it. We've got to see to the end. And then that's got to drive every decision that we make. So back to leadership lesson number one. Our belief, our faith, that is the core of every decision that we make. That's got to be the foundation for every decision we make. And if we're not leading ourselves on a faith-based level, then we're floating. We are floating. You know the only kind of trout that swims downstream? A dead one. The rest of them know where they're going. They're going against the current, and they're going upstream. I say that's the only one. I don't know, but that's what they say. That's the story I've heard, and I'm sticking to it. But we've got to know where we're going and go there on purpose. That's what Moses chose. You need a personal mission statement. If you don't have that driving statement, I encourage you to take time. You don't have to use that model, but you need to think about it. So, moving on to leadership lesson number two. We've got six or seven of them. Moses, this story comes from Acts the 7th chapter. And I love it in the New Testament when you find these places where somebody gives a sermon or a talk and they summarize a lot of the Old Testament. I could have almost spoken on Moses completely from Acts chapter 7 because Stephen, in that sermon, he just summarizes Moses' life down to a T almost. It's great. Well, this little section of it, he gives us some of these choices that Moses made. And there's a key point in here. Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in words and in deeds. So Moses was kind of a big deal in Egypt. Well, it's no surprise. Joseph became a big deal in Egypt because Joseph followed God, because he was wise to follow God. When people were wise about God, they became a big deal. Daniel, look at God's people, how He uses them in these situations. So Moses was mighty in words and in deeds. And when he was a full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed, now look at what Moses, the insight Moses had into his purpose in life. He supposed that his brethren would have understood how that by his hand God would deliver them. How did Moses know that? I don't know how. Apparently he had a vision, an understanding. We know that Jesus, through as an angel, would speak to people at different times. But Moses knew that the purpose of his life was to bring out the people of Israel. And he thought they all knew it. And he's looking at his situation. Look at where I am. I am in a position of authority. I have some influence with the Pharaoh. I am in the perfect position here to relieve the affliction of my people. There's a lot of people that were that way. And I think, Ron, didn't you talk about Esther? She was put in that situation. And Mordecai's awesome question, how do you know that you weren't put here for a time just like this? Moses was there. And he thought they knew, but they didn't. How frustrating to feel like that you are there to be a leader, but the people don't know it. That's where Moses is. So Moses kills this guy. But it said, when you're reading back in Exodus, it said he saw the affliction and he looked this way and he looked that way. And he took care of him. He thought nobody was watching. So he buries him. That's what he's doing in the picture over here. He's burying him in the sand thinking nobody saw it. So So he's trying to secretly start to take care of the Jews in Israel, but at the same time protecting his status with Pharaoh. But what he doesn't realize is God's breaking him out of that shell. God has got to get him out of Pharaoh's house so that he can call him back 40 years later. And so Moses, he does something, he knows what his purpose is, but the time's not right. What happens to an egg if you crack that egg before it's time to be cracked? You going to get a chicken out of it? No, you're not. Because it's not ready yet. So, leadership lesson number two, and this is tough. Leaders do the right thing at the right time in the right way. That's tough. That is a hard thing to do. Now, there's sometimes in the Scripture where you can come across something that feels like a gray area. I don't think there's really that many gray areas. I think there's some things that's gray on how to, when is the right time and the right way to do it. We may know that we need to have a talk with somebody that's not going to be easy. But we're not sure how the right way or the right time is. And so we don't know how to actually go about it. We know what we need to do. That's clear to us. But how to do it effectively is what we're trying to do. Moses took this into his own hands, but it wasn't the right time. So a leader, leadership lesson number two, does the right thing at the right time in the right way. And that takes prayer and trust in God to guide us to open those doors of opportunity at the right time. But we've also got to be ready and looking for it. And if we know there's a conversation we need to have, we need to pray that God will help us to know when to have that conversation, to have the right attitude with that conversation, to have the right words for that conversation. And when we see it, we're ready and we do it. Sometimes when we try to force things, we end up making it worse. So we need to be very cautious. I'm not saying we sit back on our laurels and don't ever do anything thinking, well, God hadn't opened that door yet and we're blaming it on God. We can't do that. I am saying we need to be thoughtful and careful and cautious and prayerful that what we're doing is the right way at the right time. Because you can do the right thing at the wrong time and not get the right effect. In Jude the 22nd and 23rd verses, it's talking about how we're going to be dealing with people. He says there's a couple different ways that you need to work on somebody and help them. He said there's some people you need to have compassion making a difference. So there's some folks that you really just got to try to wrap your arms around them and have compassion on them and try to help them. But there's other folks, you got to grab them like you're jerking them out of a fire and have an intervention to get their attention. But you know what he doesn't say? He doesn't say how to know the difference. I think that's prayer. I think that's prayer and trusting God to guide us and help us to understand and experience. To know, okay, is this a compassion time or is this a jerk them out of the fire and intervention time? Which one is it? I know I need to help them. How do I do it? Leaders pray about it, that they do the right thing at the right time in the right way. Moving on in Moses' life. So after he has killed the Egyptian and buried him, he runs off because Pharaoh finds out about it. He flees. He runs off to Midian for 40 years. Has a couple of kids. He's living a pretty good life over there. Well, now it's time for God to break him out of that shell too. Moses gets cracked up a lot in this story. So here he comes. He's walking around and here's this bush. Bush looks like it ought to be burning, but it's not burning up. There's a fire, but the wood's not going anywhere. And so he says, I'm going to go over here and look at it and see this sight. God speaks to him. And God says, Moses, I want you to go back. I've heard the affliction of my people. They're crying out to me. Why were they crying? Because it's time to break that shell. He's getting ready to crack Egypt open and let Israel out. So he's number one, he's scared Pharaoh because Israel's big. So everything Pharaoh does is setting himself up for failure, but he doesn't know it. So he's scared Pharaoh. He's got his attention. He's got the people's attention because he's trying to get them uncomfortable enough to be ready to run. Because if Moses comes in and says, hey, y'all, let's go. And they're like, hey, no, we got it good. I don't want to leave. I don't want to go. This is too good a situation. So he had to make it hard on them. Get them uncomfortable. Get them out of their comfort zone. So God's saying, I've heard my people. They're afflicted. They're crying. They're asking for help. Moses, you're going to go back and tell Pharaoh to let them go. That's not what Moses wanted to hear. He didn't want to go back in that house. He just ran away from it 40 years ago. He says, okay, but the people who were after your life, they're dead. Time to go back. So Moses starts coming up with excuses. He says, well, who am I? Who am I? In his mind, they're going to see me as a spoiled murderer. Because the Jews knew that he had murdered that Egyptian. Because they looked at him and they said, hey, what are you? Who made you a ruler over us? Moses? You're going to kill me like you killed that Egyptian? Yeah, we know you're our brother, but we also know you're living it up there in the palace, Moses. You are a spoiled murderer. Who am I? Moses trying to come up with an excuse. They won't believe me. What evidence do I have? What evidence do I have, God, that you've actually spoken to me? How are they going to know I didn't just make all of this up? I'm not a good speaker. Even though, interestingly enough, he was wise in all the ways of the Egyptians. Maybe he felt like he was just out of practice. Maybe talking out in the wilderness is not the same as speaking in the royal court. So he's out of practice. And he says, I'm not a good speaker. I have no experience motivating people. Well, leadership lesson number 3. God is the answer to all of your excuses. You can't make an excuse that God doesn't have an answer for. You can try, but there are no excuses with God. And who's the one person we're leading? Who are we focusing on? I can only lead myself, and then hopefully through that, lead others. But I got to lead myself first. No excuses. Zero. There's no excuse that we can give God for not leading ourselves and making the choices that He's asked us to make. God is the answer to all of your excuses. He won't hear them. So Moses goes back in before Pharaoh. But the interesting thing about this is Moses' attitude. This is moving on to leadership lesson number 4. Moses' attitude was always about God said, God will. The Lord said to do this. Moses recognized that he was just a messenger. And that's important. That's very important. Who turned the rod into the snakes? Was that Moses? No, that was God. Who parted the water? Later stories. Was that Moses? No, that was God. Who spoiled Egypt? Was that Israel? No, that was God. God set everything up so they could do it. Who destroyed the Egyptian army in the waters? Was that Moses? No, that was God. Moses had the right attitude. He was not the leader. Who was the leader? God was. You know, that's what God wanted. God didn't want them to have a king. And you know what happens? They've got Moses. They're looking up to Moses, and they look up to Joshua. They get into Promised Land, and then they go through the cycle of the judges. God didn't give them a king. You know why? Because if they would have self-regulated, if they had led themselves, they would not have needed a king. If everybody in the land lived an honest, God-fearing, faithful Christian life, would we need a police force? Would we need a military? No, goodness. We wouldn't even need locks on the doors. We wouldn't need bars on the windows. We wouldn't need anything. We wouldn't need a government. We wouldn't need a monetary system. We wouldn't need any of that. Because we would all be led by God. That's what He wanted. That's what Moses did. And preview, the big mistake that's recorded of Moses was the one time when he didn't respect that. Moses knew that God was the one who was doing and saying and giving instruction. So leadership lesson number 4, we have to recognize that God is the one that does. He might use us. He might use you to influence me. But who was the one that sent the influence? It's God. He's used speakers at this meeting to share His Word, but whose Word was it? it was God's. Hopefully there's been hearts brought closer to God through the fellowship, through the meetings, through the lessons. But who did it? It was God. God is the one that does. We are just the tools that He used to accomplish His purpose. And Moses recognized that. He said, God said, let His people go. God's going to bring plagues. God's going to do these things. And then when God did it, He said, the Lord did this. And if you repent, the Lord will take it back. He didn't say, I'm going to do it. God will do it. And the leader recognizes that. Then we move on. He's got the people out of Egypt. And we get to the situation with the golden calf. This point, like Alan talked about, this is such a sad story. So looking at it in hindsight, it just seems ridiculous that the people could even have this quick of a turnaround. But they did. God had saved them from slavery, from Pharaoh, and immediately turned on him. Now imagine being the leader, being Moses, the one who came back, followed God, had to put up with complaints from the people. Moses is almost completely alone in this situation. He's going in as a lone wolf saying, God's going to do this. Then Pharaoh makes it harder on the people. Israel's complaining at Moses, saying, hey, ever since you showed back up, Pharaoh's made it harder on us. Go away, Moses. Pharaoh's saying, Moses, go away. You're bringing all these plagues. Get away from me. And Moses is there, standing there in the middle of both sides, fussing at him, complaining at him, standing there saying, God's going to do this. Man, what kind of faith to put up with that? He didn't have followers anywhere. And I promise you, if he had not been personally driven to follow God, he wouldn't have stayed. There was probably some times where he thought, you know what? That wilderness back there in Midian, it was quiet. I enjoyed looking at the stars. There was nobody fussing at me either way. There was no pressure. That was nice. But he was driven to follow God regardless of who followed him or what they thought about him. He was personally led. Leadership lesson number 5. Remember, if someone is rejected, it is God, not you. It is hard not to take it personal. When you are a leader and you are trying to influence people and they don't follow you and they don't follow the direction that you feel so strongly is a good direction, it's hard not to take it personal. But it's not you. It's God they're rejecting. We're just the messenger for God. We have to choose to believe in God regardless of who goes along with us. Moses' mistake. Moving on to leadership lesson number 6. The people were hangry. How many of you have heard that phrase before? They were hungry and they were angry. Put it together, they were hangry. They did this a lot. They complained. We don't have anything to eat. We don't have any meat. So God sends them the manna. They get tired of the manna. All we've got is this manna. We're tired of the manna. So He sends them flesh. They don't even take time to cook it. Some of them die. They complain. Man, they thought Moses was spoiled. They were awful. They complained all the time at Moses. They didn't believe in God. They didn't trust God. They were back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, like the wave of the sea driven and tossed with the wind. They were constantly pulled between their flesh and wanting to believe in God. Flesh get bad, they'd complain, they'd have some problems, God would save them. They'd say, oh, praise the Lord, we're going to follow you, we're going to believe in you, thank you so much. And that lasted until they got hungry again. And then they flopped back the other way. Moses got tired of it. One time they were thirsty. They said, we don't have anything to drink. Why'd you bring us out here to die in this desert? You should have left us alone in Egypt. Yeah, we were slaves, but at least we had water. They're complaining. That's the second time this has happened. And God spoke to Moses and said, go speak to the rock in front of the people, and I'll give them water. Moses goes out there and says, you bunch of rebels. I can feel for him, can't you? I mean, he's put up with a lot. He's in the last 40 years of his life. Most of us hope to enjoy the last third of our life, and that was the hardest part of Moses' life. He says, you bunch of rebels? You gonna make me bring water out of this rock? And he struck the rock. Water came out. Where was his mistake?
Here.
Where was his mistake?
Here.
God said, Moses, you believed me not, and you didn't sanctify me in front of the people. And I think that those two things is the core of being a leader. Leadership lesson number 6. Never, never, never take credit for what God has done. I may perform the action of baptizing someone, but I didn't save anybody. I may have taught somebody the truth. They may have believed. I may have been instrumental in it, but I didn't save anybody. I didn't add anybody to the church. I didn't forgive anybody's sins. I didn't wash anybody's sins away. God did all of that. Never take credit for what God has done. Our role as leading ourselves personally and publicly in front of other people is two things. Number one, we must believe and have strong faith in God. That has to be our mission statement. That has to be the core that drives the way we parent, the way we treat our spouse, the way we act on our job, the way we act in the community, the way we interact with the brotherhood. Our faith, our belief is the core of all of that. The why is always because I believe in God. And second, that we talk about God, respect God in ways that show other people that He is worthy of respect. And we demand that in our presence. Not that we are special, but that when people are around us, they know that we don't appreciate when people say, "Oh my God, I can't stand it when people do that." And we need to let people know that we don't appreciate it. Because they're disrespecting the core of who we are. I don't care if you put it in OMG on Facebook. It's the same thing. It's disrespectful to God. And we need to hold God in high regards, high respect. Our role is to be strongly, deeply committed in faith to God and show others that He is worthy of respect with all of our actions. Never take credit for what God has done. Some questions to consider. Number one, is it better to show someone God in the Bible or to show someone God in your life? Which one's better? Let me add some questions to it. When you get back from a trip, do you show someone a map of where you've been, or do you show them the pictures of what you saw and what you did? When you come back, do you pull out Google Maps and say, "Hey, I was on this street right here. That's where I was." Or do you show them the evidence of what you did while you were there? What do we do in our Christian lives? Do we get it out and say, "See this verse? This right here is what it says is the truth." Or do we say, "Let me tell you what this means in my life and how this guides me." Which is better, to show somebody God in the Bible or to show somebody God in your life? Both. But show somebody God in the Bible through your life. And I think too many times I'd rather focus on just showing somebody God in the Bible. It's a whole lot easier to do that. Is it better to tell people what can do for them or what God has done for you? We need to be raising God up. The Bible, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to put the importance of the Bible down. But it's way more important. The reason we have the Bible is so we can respect God. Not just so we can memorize the Bible. We need to memorize the Bible, but the purpose is so we can have a stronger faith in God. So we don't need to just show people the Scripture. We need to show them the God behind the Scripture. The reason why we show somebody a map is so they can go and get there. Not just so they have a theoretical knowledge of what's on the map. And that's the purpose of sanctifying God, making Him holy, make Him reverent. The Scripture points us there, but let us use our lives to show it. And then leadership lesson number 7, endurance. When you're in between two sides and neither one of them like you, but you're on God's side, endure. When you're in between an army and a sea and you have no military, endure. When the people you're leading constantly complain and don't follow you, endure. When you get them where you're going and they won't walk through the door, endure. Endurance. Moses stayed the course. What's Hebrews chapter 12? What do? We finish the course. We fight the fight of faith. We run with patience the race that is set before us. A constant hope. We've got a reason to run this race that's out ahead of us. We must have endurance. So leadership lesson number 7. I think this was an entire speech at one time. Never, never, never give up. We cannot give up. We can't. You can't quit. How'd your dad make it through all his chemo and radiation treatments? Because he believed that on the other side of it, there was something better. That's some horrible stuff. I've never experienced it, but it's awful. But you believe that there's something better on the other side, you put up with it. How are we going to make it through life? How are we going to make it through the challenges of life, of leading this flesh? Because this flesh is rebellious. This flesh does not like to be brought into subjection. Paul said himself, I beat myself and keep my body under subjection, lest that when I have taught others, I myself will be a castaway. Paul says, my flesh doesn't even like to be brought under subjection, but you better do it. We've got to lead ourselves. How many times have you seen somebody's leadership fall apart because of personal cracks and personal flaws that come out? It happens all the time with presidents. It happens with CEOs, and things come out. There's personal flaws that come out, and people don't respect them anymore. They don't respect their leadership. And once you lose that respect, it is hard to gain it back. Personal excellence begins with a core decision to believe and have faith in God. And we must endure. So our 7 leadership lessons. Number 1, I've sort of summarized them a little bit. Number 1, leaders are faithful and driven by a core belief in God and God's outcomes. Number 2, leaders do the right thing at the right time in the right way. That takes experience, it takes prayer, it takes wisdom. Number 3, leaders trust God rather than making excuses. There are no excuses. There's not one of us who are going to be able to stand before God and come up with a reason why we should have been allowed to have not strove for personal excellence in following God. Not for our glory, for His glory. Not because of what we've done, because of what He's done. Number four, leaders recognize that God is the one who does. God is the one. If someone's brought into my life and there's an ability or an opportunity for an influence there, God's the one that brought that person. God's the one that draws people. God's the one that draws people and then uses us as an influence. Sure, Moses had to go through the motions. Moses had to go back. If Moses hadn't gone back, we wouldn't be talking about Moses. But God was still the one that did it. But Moses had to go. But Moses recognized all the way through that it was God that was doing everything. And he gave God the praise and the respect and the glory for it. Number 5, leaders understand that rejection isn't personal. They're rejecting God. Number 6, leaders never take credit for what God does. And number 7, leaders never quit. Now, back to the very beginning. Personal leadership. You can't quit leading yourself. You can't. You can never, ever quit leading yourself. Your flesh is going to want to draw you away as we go through different stages of life, different phases of life. The flesh draws us toward different things, different desires. There's always temptation. It changes, but there's always different lust and desires that the flesh is going to pull us toward. You cannot quit. I cannot quit. We must be striving for personal excellence in leading ourselves, and then pray that God will use us as a tool to lead and influence other people to follow Him. Thank you very much for your attention. I hope this has been helpful. Andy.